most people, when they look at me, don't really see me as being Asian. I feel like maybe if I looked more Asian, then my experiences like would have been a little different.
The laws or the cultures that ingrain us with these implicit biases, they're all based on race, you know, not culture, race. And they all start from a point of, you know, they are the other.
All right, are we all good?
Drew, you back on?
I'm back on, I'm sorry. No, I'm good.
All right, welcome everyone to the Roommate Conversations podcast with Aditya and Ben. Both of us are currently rising juniors at Emory University and have started this podcast with the main objective of unlocking the authentic college experience. Through interviewing our friends and family, we hope to give you all a better understanding of what the ultimate college experience is like. Today, we are changing things up a bit. We have two guests tonight for some exciting debates about some very interesting topics. So, I'm extremely excited to introduce some really close friends of ours at Emory, Andrew Liao and Phoebe Borsum.
Let's go!
Before I introduce them, let's hit it with the intro music.
Thank you so much, Alex Gandhi, or DJ Gandhi, or Boydell's Beats, B-O-I-D-E-L-L, B-O-I-D-E-L-L-B-E-A-T-S. Check him out on Spotify, SoundCloud, on YouTube. He's killing it. He's doing really well.
Thank you so much, Alex, and we'll see you actually on our next episode, where you'll be one of our guests. So, let's start this podcast with a few introductions. You guys should just say a little bit about yourselves, where you're from, what you're studying, and what you've been up to during quarantine.
Yeah, my name is Andrew. I'm from New York, born in Brooklyn, raised in Staten Island, and I go to Emory as well, also a rising junior, studying economics, and that's about it.
So yeah. What have you been up to during quarantine?
Nothing.
Want to tell them a little bit about your sleep schedule? I hear you stay up pretty late every night.
Yeah, I think that would be a bit of gaslighting on your part. little character portrayal. Yeah, don't want to do me like that.
All right.
Yeah, it's right. Pretty normal. Thank you very much.
How about you, Phoebe?
Okay, I'm Phoebe. I'm from Southern California. I'm also going to be a junior, and I'm majoring in nursing. So when I first came back, I was mostly just like focusing on classes, I guess. But that ended a few weeks ago, and since then, I've been doing some remote work for this company that I've worked at the past few summers, and it's not like full time or anything, but it's at least something to keep me busy, or sort of busy, and to add a little bit of structure to my schedule, so that's been nice. But other than that, yeah, not too much.
That's great. So for today's show, we're gonna change it a little bit. We're gonna have some interesting debates between the four of us. So the first topic that we want to talk about is about having a hyphenated identity. So not me, but the three of you all have a hyphenated identity. And I think that's a really interesting topic, something that actually came up in our last episode. But all of you, well, Addie doesn't live in America, but all of you are at least studying in America, but you're also Asian. So I just want to know what that's like for you in terms of having a hyphenated identity and how that affects your life.
So I'm half Japanese and half white. And in terms of, I guess, how that's affected my experience, I feel like my parents did a good job of exposing me to both cultures, like both sides of that identity. Even though obviously like I grew up here going to school here and everything, and English being my main language, I still spoke Japanese with my mom growing up. She put me in Japanese school every week, and then in the summers I'd spend them there. We'd go there for like 2 months, and she put me in regular public school, which at the time I really resented her for it. It really felt like, you know, my summer break was being taken away from me every year, and especially to go to a school in a country that I wasn't familiar with, in a language that I wasn't as comfortable speaking as everyone else in my class. But I feel like in the end, now looking back at it, I really appreciate the fact that I got to experience that. Otherwise, you know, I wouldn't be able to speak the language and I wouldn't feel connected to that side of my culture at all. And also I feel like just the friendships that I've made through that, I still keep in touch with a few of the people that I went to school with. One of them even came and visited me here in America and stayed with me for like a week. So yeah, overall, I think it's something that I'm really grateful for. Another thing I guess to note would be that I feel like when I'm going about my day-to-day life, most people, when they look at me, don't really see me as being Asian. I feel like most people are surprised when they ask me what I am and I tell them I'm half Asian. Maybe if I looked more Asian, then my experiences like would have been a little different.
I'm just curious. The way that you talked about it seemed like it was very important in your family to sort of keep in touch with your Japanese culture, even though you were living in America. Do you think that's something that's really important for people in general to sort of hold on to that culture? Or do you think it's okay if people just want to assimilate and not think about that culture?
I think it really is a personal choice. And I think either way, like there's no right answer with it. If someone wants to choose to like fully embrace and assimilate into American culture, then that's totally fine. But I do think that there's a lot of value to keeping in touch with your roots.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that. I think it's a really interesting phrase when people say, you know, sticking to your roots when it seems like they already have a preconceived like notion of what that is when they ask it to you. And really, I don't think I don't think that really makes sense. I think when you say I'm sticking to my roots, what you're really saying is I'm sticking to the things that raised me as a human being, and made me the person who I am. So if it just happens to not be, you know, the ethnic, you know, quote unquote side of you, that's totally fine as well.
Yeah, and I think for you, and for Phoebe as well, you guys have lived your entire lives in America. So when you say your roots, I think that like being an American is also part of your roots. So, but like there, it's different, say, from someone who is an Asian immigrant who comes here midway through their life.
100%.
Yeah, and Addie, for you, this sort of takes on a whole nother life of its own, because you sort of moved around to a lot of different places throughout your life, and now you're studying in America, but you're originally from India, so you'd probably say that your roots are in India, but we've talked a lot about how you sort of don't even know what to say at this point in terms of where you're from. So how do you think about this for yourself?
I still don't have an answer, to be honest. We touched upon it last episode a little bit. It's definitely difficult for me. I'm not sure. When someone asks me where I'm from, it's so difficult, because I would love to say I'm from Hong Kong because I lived most of my life there. But I don't live there anymore, right? So I have an Indian passport. For people who don't know, I was born in Indonesia, Jakarta. I lived in Malaysia for a couple of years. Then I moved to Hong Kong when I was 7, lived there for 11 years, finished my high school there. Then I moved to the US for university. And when I moved, and when I graduated high school, my parents actually moved out of Hong Kong and moved back to Malaysia. And so when people ask me where I'm from, it's hard because for Indians, I'm not really Indian enough if I say I'm Indian. My accent or the way I speak or even the fact that I have never lived in India, you know, even though I have an Indian passport, I've actually never lived in India, so that's tough. Then if I say if I'm from Hong Kong, first off, I don't look like I'm from Hong Kong. I don't know the language. I don't know Cantonese. I do know a little bit of Mandarin, but I don't live there anymore, you know, and it's just every place that I go or every place that I live in, it's tough to find a place where I can call home. And it's not like safety is not the issue for me, because like I'm so fortunate to be part of a family that like I'm able to like be part of, like wherever, like I guess you can say that wherever my parents are, that's home for me. But like I'd love to have some national pride, and I do have it for India and Hong Kong to a certain extent, but because I've lived in so many different countries and I've moved around so much in my life, that it's hard to fit into some sort of group. So even in the US or Hong Kong, I tend to stick around with friends that are usually Asian because they have similar upbringings to me, and they have similar like I guess thought process. But even the people who are like from Hong Kong, it's just difficult. It's difficult because like for you guys, I wanted to ask you, have you guys ever questioned your identity? Do you guys ever like feel like you're missing out on your Asian side, the Chinese side, not being able to speak the language? How does that play into what you guys think about where you're from and stuff?
Yeah, I want to jump in on this because I grew up in New York where it's far too simple to say, you know, I'm Chinese American when you go to the bodega on the corner and the Mexican guy there is speaking English, you know, Spanish and Chinese within the space of 5 sentences. I go to the deli and this guy, I swear, he knows Spanish better than he knows English, and he's Chinese. and so when you take it to such an extreme point of multiculturalism, I think what you begin to find is this, you know, extreme melding of cultures where you don't know what you are anymore, but the city that raised you and the people that you surround yourself with. So I guess this definitely ties back to what I was saying earlier about not having to, you know, choose between this route or this route, but having your roots, you know, naturally develop. Like if you were to ask me, are you like, how Chinese are you? I get that a lot. You know, I feel like everyone with hyphenated identities gets asked, are you, you know, that ethnic part? How ethnic are you? And although I definitely draw a lot of my influence from a Chinese upbringing with Chinese parents from China, I think just to put it in those so short of a label as a hyphenated identity is far too much of a simplification.
That was such a great point that you made about how it gets to a point of multiculturalism where you're really just the city that you were raised in and the people that you surround yourself with.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. So because I moved out of Hong Kong and I'm not in touch, or I don't really see any of my Hong Kong friends anymore, it's so hard to say that I'm still part of that culture because I've moved out of that, you know? And that's why it's somewhat difficult for me even when I'm making friends in the university. It's hard to think that it's sad, but I somewhat feel like every type of friendship that I find is somewhat temporary, you know? And like it's fortunate that like we have social media that connects us, and I'm still connected to a lot of my friends from Hong Kong, but not being able to see them or like hang out with them It's tough. I now stick around and talk to a lot of my US friends, but the reason is because I don't see my Hong Kong friends at all much, you know?
Yeah, I think there's something, you know, this might be too harsh of a word, but I think there's something kind of insidious when you say you are this kind of culture, because implied in that is, you know, your definition, and very usually a stereotypification, is that a word? We'll just keep that in there. Of this idea of a culture that you have in your mind. If I were to ask you, how white is Eminem? And did he stick to his roots? You know, you come into a lot of contradictions, at least contradictions to what is generally believed to be white and what his roots might be.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And I just to take that a little further, I wanted to ask you guys if you think it's important to sort of have a place that you say this is home, or to say these are my roots, or is it okay to sort of say, you know, I don't really know.
I'll just jump in, I guess. I think our locations, or, you know, where we consider home, definitely plays a huge role in defining our identities. But I think there's also so many other countless factors that go into it, like Audie was saying, with, you know, the relationships you form with your friends, family, like your education. I think all those factors play just as large a role as your location. So for someone like Audie, where he can't pinpoint one place that he can say, okay, this is home, this is where I grew up, this is the place that kind of like molded me into the person I am, he has a whole huge list of other factors then that like played into his identity and who he considers himself to be. So I think it's not like location, like where you consider home or bust. I think there's a lot of factors.
Do you ever feel annoyed if you go back to your home country? Do you ever feel annoyed if you ever visit either Japan or China and you feel like a little out of place? Do you ever feel that, like, oh, because you don't know the language well enough or something, or people comment about, like, maybe you're not from that country, like, you're not Chinese enough, you're not Japanese enough, you're not Indian enough. Does that ever annoy you? How does that affect you?
I don't know that I've ever felt annoyed. I think part of it might just be because I've been pretty lucky in my experiences there, I guess, where the kids I went to school with were super nice. You know, they welcomed me with such open arms. They were so excited that, like, someone from another country was coming to school. And then the other people I would interact with would just be, like, my grandparents and my mom's friends and things like that. So it was all just people that would show me nothing but, you know, love and support. But I'm sure there's plenty of people, you know, who do go back to their countries or wherever, like their parents' countries, and aren't welcomed with the same sort of situation, I guess.
Yeah, let me just jump in here, because that's actually really cool that all the kids just welcomed you. Like, that definitely is a really cool experience. My experience has been a little different, and I'll give you two examples. The first instance was, I'm in seventh grade, I'm in math class, and math class finishes, I'm in the hallway with my friend, and my friend goes, like, Andrew, are you Mexican? And I'm like, what do you think? Like, because all my life, like, I've been surrounded by, like, straight Asian kids.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, I look, like, 100% like these kids. Like, I don't understand what, like, where is this confusion coming from? Are you messing with me?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, you know what? I thought you were Mexican. You just look like that. Fun fact, this man went to Emory is in our age, is in our grade.
What?
Can you drop
his
name?
He just transferred. I'm not dropping his name, but you know who you are.
Andrew, that's so funny because I've been asked if I'm Hispanic or part Hispanic so many times too. Yeah. And I don't understand. I don't get it. But.
Yeah, that is so weird. All right. Yeah, so the second example, I go back to China, and we're having this, like, family photo shoot or whatever. Boom. So we're at the place, and the photographer asked my mom if we're mixed, referring to me and my sister. That was just so eye-opening to me because, you know, these two instances... These two people coming from totally different, you know, backgrounds, both have the same confusion. But there's always, you know, again, like some expectation of what it means, you know. Mm-hmm. And often, like, appearances is the first way to, is the first, you know, inch on that measuring stick.
Yeah, and going back to, like, Audie's question, I guess you also asked... about how not being super used to the language, like how that's affected our experiences in going back to those countries. And I guess I didn't address that initially. So for me, at least when I was a lot younger, since I wasn't completely always being immersed in the Japanese language, like obviously I struggled a lot with it. So then when I would go to school, I always just felt so anxious in the classroom because I don't know how it was for you guys when you were in elementary school, but when we do like class-wide reading things where each student would read a sentence and then it'd like go to the next one and you kind of snake through the room. And I just remember every single time we did that in my class in Japan, like I'd always be reading ahead in the lines and like practicing it 10 times because I didn't want to screw it up. And just other things like that where, like, they'd call on kids to go to the front of the board and I'd always be so terrified of, like, oh, my God, like, I'm not as fluent as these kids. I'm not as good as them. But, I mean, it's just something, I guess, it's inevitable, I think, when you go out of your comfort zone to be put in situations where you risk looking like a fool, like, looking like an idiot. But I think... in the end, you just have to appreciate them because it's how you grow, I guess. Not trying to sound too corny, but
so, I'm sorry. I'm laughing and smiling because sometimes I do that with English as well.
Wait, really?
Let me hear this.
Like my English was never that good back in the day, at least even now. I don't think my English is up to par with all my friends, mainly because. It was my second language, so I used to read English, like whenever we did English reading in class, I used to read ahead, and I used to memorize it like 8 times.
Yeah,
and I think that's a good segue into the next topic that we wanted to discuss, which is about language, and it's a discussion that we've had before about the idea of a global language, in terms of having one language throughout the whole world. And so I've pointed out how that might be a good idea in terms of getting rid of barriers between different groups of people and making communication a lot easier. But Addy has pointed out a lot of the time how language can be connected to culture as well, which is something that I'm not necessarily used to, but I think that's a very interesting point. So I just want to get your ideas on what you guys think of the idea of a global language.
I definitely see what Adi's saying about how language and culture are so closely tied together. And I can definitely see how, like, going with a global language, you'd run the risk of, like, losing a lot of that culture, even negating it in some ways. With English, because I feel like if there were to be a global language, like, the direction it's going, it'd probably be English, right? Or are you thinking, like, a whole new sort of language that everyone would just learn?
I wasn't thinking that far ahead. I just thought of...
Theoretically, right?
Theoretically.
Okay, so for me, look, culture, a language has, is not just words, right? It's not just ability to speak to one another. It has metaphors, it has idioms, it has similes, it has so many different expressions within a certain language, right? And the thing is, that is somewhat tied to a nation's culture, their upbringing and stuff. Having like a universal language where we adopt, let's say, English or Chinese or even Hindi or any other language that people use globally, I think eradicates a huge part of culture for so many different people, you know? Mm. There's a reason why even Ben, like, even though you speak English and your bar mitzvah was where you had to speak Hebrew, right? And the reason is because maybe you don't even understand it, but even if you translate it to English, it wouldn't have the right meaning. History and culture and religion and language ties together so cohesively that if you eradicate a person's language, their culture and history is also taken away.
Yeah, too. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, but just to go to the Hebrew example for a second, I agree that you definitely say, do your bar mitzvah and temple is done in Hebrew because it has a cultural significance. But I also think at the same time that I think my bar mitzvah would have meant a lot more to me and to the people that were listening to it if it had been in a language that they could understand. Because I think when you can understand it, you can relate to it a lot better. Like, there's a difference between having cultural significance and then also being able to comprehend and also connect to it emotionally. So I think that while other languages can have cultural significance, I think that you sometimes lose the ability to connect to it when you can't understand it.
Yeah, I want to bring the point up that that there are, you know, certain words in some languages that can't really be, you know, translated into, say, English, for example. I think damn, what is the language they speak in the Philippines? What is that called?
Tagalog?
Yeah, yeah. I've heard there are some words in Tagalog. Well, let's say, like, one word in English. There are, like, maybe, like, 7 or 8 ways to say it in Tagalog. And each one of them has a different, you know, vague difference to them. Or subtle difference, I mean. But think about this solution, for example. If you were to take that idea of each one of those words and then just, you know, make a new word for that idea in English, what would you say to that, Eddie?
Maybe. The issue with my thought process is that, or like, sometimes what I get irritated too about culture or not being the argument that I'm not Indian enough and stuff. The issue is, I also feel like culture is ever-changing, you know? Culture is not just history. It's something that evolves over time. Practices and language evolve. English was not the same thing that it was 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Same as the Tamil or maybe Mandarin or Japanese. They evolve over time. So I'm not opposed to that idea.
Yeah, yeah. And something that I just want to point out, I just thought about this. Was that sometimes I feel like I have trouble being able to understand other cultures and connect to other cultures because of the language barrier, specifically because of the language barrier, where, like, for example, like, sometimes we watched, like, Hindi movies, right? And we have to use subtitles, which is frustrating because you can't enjoy a movie in the same way using subtitles, or for movies and for other things as well. So I think that There's something to be said about the barriers between cultures and this sort of tribalism where you can only stick with your one culture specifically because of the language barrier, where if that were to be eradicated, other people would be able to connect and understand other people's cultures a lot easier.
Mm. Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think at the root, language is just something that we've used to express our thoughts. And if we can, you know, just conjure up, like, some universal language, I think that really help in that process.
Yeah.
I guess I would argue that the value of the art, whether it be like that Hindi movie or whatever, whatever, like whether it's a piece of entertainment that's in a language that you can't understand, a lot of its value is just rooted in the fact that it's spoken in like a specific language. Like if you were to take a song that's sung in some language that you don't understand, I think you can still appreciate it without maybe like comprehending the words. And I think like translating that into a global language just to fit it into a box that everyone can understand wouldn't like solve the problem really.
Ben, I was actually wondering for you, you grew up in Westchester, New York, where at least in your high school, the people that you were surrounded were predominantly white. I was wondering, how has it been having friends in Emory who are mainly Asian? How has that changed your outlook in a lot of things?
Yeah, I think that's something that's really interesting because, like, at least until I went to college, pretty much everyone I knew was white. And then, like, obviously, when I met you as a roommate, we sort of made friends that were mostly Asian. And I think that it's been a really great experience for me because where I've grown up, I've sort of been cut off from, honestly, the rest of the world and understanding a lot about other cultures and identities and experiences. Something that I've been thinking about recently with especially what's been going on in the news is how important being surrounded with people of other cultures and races is. And I think that at least with racism, for example, I think it's almost impossible to cure institutional racism and stuff that's been ingrained in your mind unless you're surrounded with people of other races. Because you can say all you want that, no, like this, obviously racism is wrong and all this stuff, but until you're really surrounded and you understand those people, I think it's really hard to truly eliminate that from your mind. So I think diversity is really important and it's been a great experience for me.
I think definitely to echo that point, I think before you meet other cultures, there is this train of thought or logic that you have in your mind where you think of them as, you know, the other. And then along with their culture, you just make that synonymous with race. And so to say that, to say somewhat in your mind that, you know, if I haven't experienced the culture, I haven't experienced the race. And then this, you know, to say it's the same thing, I think that's where a lot of the problem comes from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me add a point here, because obviously there is, you know, much benefit to you know, socializing with other cultures and other races. But I think it's also worth mentioning that the fact that this even has to be necessary for, you know, to combat racism or to get these prejudices out of your mind is, you know, back to that earlier idea of that people, you know, associate with like race and culture to be the same thing. And it, you know, to elaborate on that, what I mean is that that has to be necessary because people, the laws that, you know, that the laws or the cultures that ingrain us with these implicit biases, they're all based on race, you know, not culture, race. And they all start from a point of, you know, they are the other.
No, I think that's a great point. I was listening to Jalen Rose, who is an ESPN commentator, but he talked about how, like, everyone enjoys African-American culture so much. Hip-hop music, basketball, athletics, all different types of sports. Mm-hmm. Yet, and that's culture. But when people think about race, they think about it completely differently, which I think, as you said, that's a big part of the problem.
let me, you know, you can cut this out because this might come out super bad, but you wouldn't put a knee to the neck of hip hop. That wouldn't happen. You put a knee to the neck of a black man because you have these implicit biases of what that might mean.
Absolutely.
All right,
good shit, guys.
All right, well, thank you guys so much for coming on, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Peace.
Thank you.